Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Welcome, everybody, to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. This is going to be a... I'm loving this. We're testing out a microphone here that's just great. It sounds amazing. I want to welcome my guest, Dave Perlman from Perlman Microphones. Originally, we were going to do a show on, he plays pedal steel, he's a guitar player, which we'll talk about in a second, and but the elevator went down, and I just, like, we were on the fourth floor, and it's like, there's just no way I'm going to subject him to carry a pedal steel guitar up here on four floors. But I had known about the microphones, and I had heard about them, I mean, I'd seen them at NAMM, and but I had a show on a few, about a month or so ago, with Jean-Pierre Durand and Lisa Carbe, and they had just done a new album, and we were talking about the album on the air, and they had mentioned that they had this new mic. It was a TM1 from Dave Perlman, and they just loved it, and they used it pretty much for the whole album. It's a simple, their album is just guitars. It's both of them playing guitar solo, and they use that a lot, and I'm going to play a clip of it in a minute, and we have one of the... We have one of the really cool mics in. Actually, as I understand from Dave, this is the mic that Elton John used on his new album. So I'm very honored to have this out. This thing sounds incredible. So anyway, I wanted to welcome Dave to the show. And what I like about when I was, you know, doing the research and stuff on Dave and his company is he's works both sides of the microphone or the console, as we would say. I mean, as a guitar player, as mainly pedal steel, he's played with a lot of amazing people, and he's done some, and we're going to be doing a show later in the fall with him on pedal steel, so I will go more into that. But also, too, he had his own recording studio for many years and did a lot of recording, and he won an award for a Grammy award-winning record that he had done. And we'll ask him about that in a minute. And he basically had an engineering award for that. So he knows his stuff. And he's put together a company. He's built these mics that just amazing sound. We're going to talk a little bit about why that happened and why he decided to do that. But first, let's play a clip. This is the title tune. This is a segment that from the Carbe Duran album, just to get a feel of what the sound of this microphone is. This is called A Bridge Between. It's the title song of the album. Before I do that, real quick, I want to thank Ronan for coming in and manning the board today, because I'm going to be playing the guitars. And also, I thought I had talked with my friend Bo. Bo Astrup is another engineer. He's mixed Jim Stubblefield's album and a couple of the Incendio albums and has done a lot of recording. And we had been talking a long time about, you know, educating people. You know, a lot of people record in their houses and stuff, but they really don't know, you know, there's an advantage to going into a good room with a good mic and getting it. And a lot of the new studios are not that expensive. It's really not that costly, but the impact of having that golden tone from that room, the room sound, to really get your guitar or whatever acoustic instrument to speak, it's worth the money. So we were talking about possibly in the future of doing a whole thing about how to record guitar and use a room and how to find a good room and do that. So when it came around the time, you know, that thanks to Lori Reamer, I want to thank her too for putting us together. When it came time to do this this show with the microphone, Bo was the perfect person because, again, he's real into, you know, mic placement, how it works with a guitar. So we brought some guitars in. I brought my Martin and my Guild 12 string, and we're going to play and show what this mic can do. Okay, but let's go ahead and play the A Bridge Between. Let's play that clip real quick, and then we'll talk to Dave about these mics. Sound. That's just a killer sound. Dave, welcome to the show. It's great
Thank
to have you here. Now,
you.
Real quick, I want to go a little bit about, because I think it's important that you're a guitar player. I think that, to me, is significant because your ear, you're listening for certain things that you want, and especially in how you design the mics, even though these mics do much more than just guitars, but you started as a regular guitar player, but then you went into pedal steel or vice
right,
versa?
Right, yeah.
Okay, so you've been playing, you've been doing a lot of gigging with pedal steel.
Oh, yeah, since I was like 12.
And then you had, a few years back, you set up, you had it for many years, you had a studio, right?
Right, I opened the studio in 79.
Okay.
And that closed in 2005.
Oh, wow, yeah. That's a pretty good run.
Yeah.
That's pretty, and I went to write down the name of that, the award that you won for. What was the album?
The band was called Beau Soleil, and the name of the record was L'Amour ou la Foulée, Zydeco category.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so, but, and the reason I'm mentioning that is your expertise in engineering and stuff.
Right.
All of that, and plus your playing. You know what you want in terms of sound, what you're doing, right. And when you're playing or when you're mixing or recording. So what got you, what gave you the idea, when did you decide to design a mic? Especially, there's a lot of mics out there. There's a lot of stuff out there. What made you want to dive into there?
Well, interestingly enough, yeah, it started with the studio. You know, I had the studio, and I had a pretty good collection of microphones. I had C12s and 47s and 67s. I also had one of the largest collections of RCA ribbon mics in town, so I did a lot of horn sections, a lot of big band
those
recordings
things were amazing.
And stuff,
yes.
You know, trombone records, trumpet records, you know, just a lot of stuff. But a lot of the times people would call up to book the studio and they'd want to know what you have, and they go, well, you have a couple of C12s and you've got this, but... You know, we've got like six singers, and everybody wants to have a U47 or a C12 or an ELA, like M250 kind of a mic. And after a while, when you have a studio for so long, you start to realize every time something goes down on your console or your machine, I was all analog for a long time, you know, you would have a tech come in and your tech would eat up the money you made for the day fixing all your stuff. And, you know, I did have a little bit of a electronic background. And then, you know, standing over the shoulders of my techs and watching what they did. And I started opening up my mics to do just simple repairs and modifications and realized that, you know, the knowledge that I did have enabled me to dig deeper into that. And then it started to turn into a thing where I thought, well, if I just make like 10 really super high quality tube mics with really good capsules, I would advertise that, go, look, I've got this huge collection of tube microphones. So you can bring in 10 singers and we'll all have really, really great microphones. So originally it was just that. I was building them all in the tech room behind the studio. And what happened, you know, they didn't even have names on them. They were just like, you know, metal tubes and very crudely made, but they sounded really good. And people would come in and sing into them and say, well, what is this? And I'd say, oh, it's just something I built in the back of the studio. And they go, well, can I buy one?
Oh, so.
And they go, I guess. They go, how much? I go, I don't know.
Well, the thing is that when you were doing that and you were basically starting out replicating what you had, so you have more of the same type of mic.
Right.
But did you start noticing ways to make them better?
Well, here's the thing. You know, people say, did you design this mic? And you go, well, no, I really didn't design this mic. Every amplifier and every microphone and everything was done by, you know, the guys who were the real geniuses in the 30s and 40s, the RCA and AT&T and all those guys. Those are the guys who did all the work. You know, we're standing on their shoulders. So, you know, I'm adapting designs.
Okay.
And, you know, not necessarily, it's like, you know, it's an analogy people used to, I like to use. People would come in and go, oh, I've got this U47. It's the best mic I've ever had. It sounds so great. Let's change it. And you go, why do you want to change? You just told me it's your favorite, absolute perfect mic, what, you know. And then they would say, well, is it going to be better? And I go, well, no, it's not going to be better. It's going to be different. There's a huge difference between better and different. So, you know, yeah, you can. I would adapt certain designs and try to modernize for building and stuff, and especially a U47, which had, you know, a single power supply. Because the tube itself was rated at 55 volt for the filament, which you can't get anymore. So you have to kind of adapt the designs. But the original mics were based on U47 designs.
Because I noticed that you make several different models.
Right.
The one that Carbe Duran was using was the TM1.
That was the original one.
That was the original one.
Right.
Which is, it has characteristics similar to a U47.
Right.
Okay. And but you have some custom ones where you mentioned that you have, like, for example, the Church is which I
is this, this is one. This one, right?
It has a refurbished K47.
Well, no, that this mic isn't using the K47. This mic uses an M7 capsule from Berlin, made hand built by a guy named Tiersch, with original PVC, rolled PVC.
So that's a new one.
This is like, you know, okay, a specialized custom built.
Because even on the LE, which you made for Pete's Place Audio,
right,
the limited edition, you use a
that has a Neumann,
a refurbished. You basically take an older K67 right. capsule and
rebuild them.
Right,
right.
So, but I was noticing that. So you had some things where you were, you know, and I'm sure the logic behind that is to get it. That's the closest you're going to get to the original mic using the original capsule. But your TM1, you have a newer, that's a newly manufactured capsule, right?
Well, the capsule I use, again, is based on that original design. It's like, you know, the geniuses who did this stuff, like I said, I'm just standing on their shoulders.
Right. No, I understand.
So you know, I do have the capsules that I use right now, especially for the TM1 and the TM2 as well right now, and the TM47. The brass is drilled for me by a wonderful company called Pyramid Machining in Simi Valley. And then I have a company that makes, I buy DuPont Mylar, 6-micron Mylar, and I have another company that sputters 24-karat gold on them. And then I tension and tune them, tune the diaphragms in, and I assemble the capsules in my shop.
Okay.
So I have a special tuning that I like to use. There are other certain microphone capsule manufacturers I think are a little bit bright. They tune them a little crisp. And especially that's one of the problems that a lot of the, in, you know, like 10 years ago before guys were really doing a lot of this and the capsules from China were coming out, and they just had those diaphragms so tight that you were getting a lot of that really high, mid, crispy, nasty thing that everybody hated. And so I tuned them down a little bit to give them more of a vintage.
Now, all of your, we're going to go through briefly just a description of all the models, but the all of your mics are tube mics, correct?
Well, yes and no. I am just starting to build a little fat mic just because.
Just because.
Just because somebody asked me to.
Oh, okay. No, that's cool. But I mean, the ones that are on the site right now are all tube. Now, let me ask you about the tubes. Is that a problem, or have you been pretty good? I mean, have the tubes been consistent?
Well, here's the thing about the tubes. Nobody in America is making tubes because it's illegal because of the arsenic and the lead and all the other byproducts and stuff. So I scour eBay for a couple hours every morning, and I go on European sites, and I find tubes. You know, you just have to find them. Russia and China are making tubes. Sometimes the quality can be a little iffy. You know, you can hand pick, you know, 10 or 20 tubes out of a giant box and find some real good ones. But for the most part, I use you know, old stock tubes that I find all over Europe and all over the United States. Radio repairmen, TV repairmen, you know, who have massive quantities of tubes in their garages or, you know, and the kids are just going, oh, we got to sell all these tubes.
That's amazing because, I mean, you would think it would tap out, but you still...
Well, yeah, and I'm buying, like, somebody will call me up and go, hey, I've got 1,000 of these tubes. I'll sell them to you for $500. Sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, there's no way to... Is there any way to get to work with the manufacturers to make a consistently good tube? I know, like, for example, the owner of Electro Harmonics... He bought a factory in Russia.
Right.
And he said that, you know, so he basically told him what he wanted. And
You can find some pretty good ones, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can find them. Actually, some of those tubes I've used in a couple of my mics, and they sound great.
They're okay. So there is, it's not a thing where you might end up not having any tubes.
Right. No, I've got thousands and thousands and thousands of tubes.
Yeah, because I remember that. That was a big concern. I know that's also, too, with solid state.
Right.
Pedal manufacturers, the IC the chips are really, the consistency is difficult to get them to be real consistent.
Exactly.
But I remember Mike Matthews had said that that he liked those. He bought the factory because of that. He wanted consistent tubes. Let's go down the line and talk a little bit about the different models so they understand the differences between them.
Okay.
The TM1 is your first one. And
that was the first. Right. That was the first mic I built, and it originally. That I really was trying to emulate a U-47. So I was using old stock German metal tubes from, you know, World War II era, an EF-14 tube, which was essentially the same as the VF-14 in the U-47. I don't want to get cuckoo technical here, but pretty much sounding the same tube. And I was using an imported transformer at the time, and then I got... the wonderful guys over at Cinemag Transformers in Chatsworth started making custom transformers for me. And that mic sold for a long time. And then we started really running out of a lot of the old German tubes, the really super good quality. So I found a glass tube that was readily available, that was made in the U.S., made all over Europe, that had the exact same qualities of the old German tube. So the TM1 that is being made now is using that glass tube, a custom-made Cinemag transformer, and my hand-built capsule.
Oh, okay. Now, the TM2, I noticed that you use, this is a question for all the mics, because one of them, like the
See
church
if all
has,
the mics can answer.
The church has a triode 6072 tube, which is like a 12AY7.
Right.
And then your TM2 has a pentode tube.
Right, the TM1, the TM2, and the 47. Now, originally, like the U47 was also, it was a pentode wired like a triode. So all the plates wired together. And again, we can't get too technical. But the TM2 originally, for a long time, I was just making the TM1. And people were calling up and writing emails and stuff and saying, man, we love this microphone. It's awesome. And we want to use it as an overhead. We wanted to get a pair of them for overheads for our drums. And it's a big mic. And they just kept pulling our stands over. Mm-hmm. So we used to have to get sandbags and ropes and things and stuff to hold the microphones up. They go, can you make this mic smaller? Mm-hmm. So the TM2 was essentially a smaller version of the TM1. It does sound a little bit different. I'm using the same capsule, same circuit, except I'm using a smaller output capacitor and a smaller tube, so it'll fit into a smaller mm-hmm. body. Mm-hmm. Also, the custom-built Cinemag transformer.
Oh, okay.
Really super high-quality stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the TM2, the answer to that, because guys say, well, we want to put these in front of acoustic guitars and saxophones and overheads.
Mm-hmm. And, well, it said on your site, that's a good one for... You use that for drums.
A lot of guys can stick it in there.
So that's pretty cool. And then you have the LE, which is
The limited edition mic was essentially the same thing as the TM2, but then I would add, again, it was because people were asking, I was buying genuine Neumann 67 and 87 capsules out of Europe, out of repairmen's drawers that had been broken. And we would either repair them or have them repaired and put them in mics because people were asking about a U67 type sound.
Mm-hmm.
But then I thought, well, instead of actually making a 67, because there were other guys, chasing that. So I said, well, I'll make a hybrid mic. So it's a 67 capsule with a 47 circuit.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got its own little voice.
It's But the interesting thing about that amp is, and correct me if I'm wrong, the TM1 and TM2 are just cardioid, or are they switchable?
They're switchable. Most of the mics I make are switchable. They're cardioid and omni. Right.
Okay, and then do they all have that low-pass filter?
Now that's an interesting question. I was going to get into that. When I first started doing this, and I didn't know how to build capsules yet, and I was purchasing capsules from China, and they had that Chinese sound. And people would say, yeah, the mics sound great, but they've got this high-mid thing. And so originally I built that switch that cut the high-mids
mm-hmm.
to compensate for the bad capsules.
Right. But it actually gives it more of like what you mentioned, it gives it more like a ribbon type
right.
sound. And we'll demo it. We have one of the...
Well, now that I've been making my own capsules as well, is that I've been keeping that switch, and it really, really turns the mic into two mics.
Mm-hmm.
So it I've kept it, and it really works well.
Now, with that switch on, is on a cardioid, the way you have it designed, is there always a little bit of a bump in the mids? Is that just inherent in the design?
Well, cardioid, you're always going to have more low end and low mids in cardioid.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that everybody was told... The reason a lot of people like the ribbons is they're so flat.
Right.
The response is so flat. So,
well, up to a certain degree.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have the high frequency of some of the electrets or the newer condensers.
The condensers, yeah.
So, but that ribbon switch, does that flatten it out a lot more, or is it just...
It actually cuts out, starting around 4 kilohertz, mm-hmm. it's a soft knee type cut. So, yeah, it makes it sound a little bit less condensery.
Right. Well, it was interesting because we were talking before, and I know Bo's eyes got big because it's a high-pass filter, or low-pass.
Low-pass.
I can't remember which one is which, but it's actually a low-pass filter. And that was kind of interesting. So you're shelfing above.
Right.
So that's very, yeah, that's kind of an interesting way to approach
right.
it.
And everybody who uses it says, oh my God, you know, we had this guitar that was too jangly, and we hit that switch, and now it fits in the mix. And mm-hmm. Or we had this girl who was singing, and it didn't work, and we hit the switch, and now it's smooth as can be.
Well, that switch, we'll show it in a second, because I'm going to pull out the guitars. The next mic on the list is the Church, and this is the one that we have here today, right. And this is the one that Elton used on his album.
Right. I had some great friends who facilitated that mic being brought into the Village, and Elton did a blind listening test on a bunch of mics and picked this model for the vocals on his new mm-hmm. album.
Now, this one you said has the M7 capsule, but you can also get it with the K47.
Actually, I try not to. I try to keep them as...
M7?
Yeah, as stock as possible and keep them...
Oh, okay. So, because I was just curious what the difference in the sound was.
Right.
But this one is basically a... it's modeled after the Stanley Church MGM microphone.
Right, right.
From the 50s.
Right.
If you've ever listened, I know there's recordings now you can get of some of the orchestra recordings from the studio from MGM right off the mag.
Sure,
I think they're using...
Oh, and Sinatra used them, and all kinds of people use these mics.
Because this is it's a great-sounding mic. And then you have the TM250.
Right. The TM250 is, again, I was commissioned, a good friend of mine, Mike Arvold, who is a scoring engineer, commissioned me originally to build this mic for him. And we had the original AKG schematics. And it was one of those funny things is how you keep learning every day.
Mm-hmm.
You learn new things. And we got together and Mike said, listen, I want this to be like the best mic, and we went out and
mm-hmm.
we bought, you know, the very, very best resistors and diodes and the very, very best capacitors and like the most expensive stuff and spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars on parts. And we built the mic mm-hmm. and we turned it on and we just went, yeah, it's not, doesn't really sound that good, you know. Like it works and everything, but it's not so great, you know. So I said, well, tell you what. Come back in a week. Let me mess with some stuff. And I started buying old stock parts that were available in the 50s and 60s. So the tolerances weren't as exact as they are now, because you can get like 1% and 0.1% and, you know, tolerance. And so we were buying like 5 and 10% resistors and you know, not the greatest quality capacitors and, mm-hmm. you know, not the best stuff. And I built the mic that way, and it was like night and day. We turned the mic on. It was just like, oh, there's the magic. There,
it's right there.
That's the thing. Yeah, Bo.
So.
But because it brings up a very interesting point that we had a discussion with a composer and engineer this afternoon about what is the take on perfectly matched microphones. And we're talking about going back where the tolerances was so wide.
Right.
And what is a matched pair?
Right.
Is there really a matched pair anymore?
Well, there can be. And again, it's like one of the things I want to point out. Every single one of these microphones I build, they're all hand-built. And there's no printed circuit boards inside the mics. They're all point-to-point wiring. I twist the leads of the resistors together, and I solder them myself and cut them. And so it's all old-style stuff.
So each of them will be unique. It's not
every one of them is unique, but people will call me and say, well, I want a matched pair of mics, and I say, well, it's going to be an extra so much money per day for me to make you a matched pair of mics, because you really do have to lay out the parts and measure every part, and every capsule and every tube has to be measured. Sometimes I'll have to build, and again, it's like when you're building capsules, it's like building guitars or building violins or something. And we mm-hmm. were just talking about how, you know, you go into a store and you play 10 guitars from the same run from the same manufacturer, and they're all different a little bit, right? So I might have to build 10 or 15 capsules, and you measure them, and if you really want a real matched pair of microphones, you know, it takes a couple extra days to make this.
Well, let me ask you this, though. In your experience of using the different mics, I'm a big fan of multiple miking the guitar, using two mics.
Yeah.
Is there a pair that works well together of your models? Like, is the TM1 work really good with the TM250? Is there anything that you found in your own experience recording?
Well, you know, having been an engineer for so many years, too, I really like the large diaphragm and small diaphragm pair. So I don't make a small diaphragm microphone. So I would still say, you know, I like to have the large diaphragm in front, you know, maybe a couple feet away or something.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then I like to have like a KM84 or an SM81 or a small diaphragm microphone pointing towards the 12th fret at an angle. And, you know, you mix and move. And
well, that's the thing. Like, to me, the match thing doesn't matter as much because if you're using different mics, and you really do have to use different mics.
Right.
I mean, to me, the sound, like you're saying,
right.
it makes a big difference. I mean, using two different ones, it gives it a whole, you know, it adds more than...
Well, guys like the match stuff for like over, you know, drums or rooms or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
They want the matched pair.
But the, okay, well, oh, one more. There's only one more that I want to cover is the TM-47.
Okay, the TM-47, and again, it's one of those marketing things. It's a really great microphone. I used to take my TM-1 around to studios all over town, just to the major studios, some of the smaller studios, just, you know, composer studios. And one of the things I heard, you know, the guy would say, well, you know, we did this vocal track with a U-47, and I said, well, let's you know, make a safety of that track, and let's punch in with my TM-1, and let's do a blind testing that way. And we did it, and guys would go, oh, my God, I can't tell the difference. And I'd say, so do you want to buy one? And they go, well, no, because it kind of doesn't look as vintage as some of my other mics. They go, it sounds great, but, you know, we need the look for our clientele. And I, you know...
Okay.
So I said, okay. And I said, so you would buy it if it looked more vintage? And they said, sure. So I started, I sourced out a more vintage looking body. And then it got to the point, I'm like, listen, if I'm going to do that, let's upgrade some stuff. So I used upgraded parts. It's really an upgrade from the TM-1. It's got a larger custom built transformer, and it's got, you know, I'm using different tubes and... You
well,
know,
you
higher quality
it
parts.
Mentions in there. I'm curious about this. It mentions a Perlman BV-8 type output transistor. Is that
right.
the one that Cinemag makes for you?
Actually, that one is made for me from a different company.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what's the main difference in characteristics?
Well, that particular transformer, I took my remaining transformer out of a real U-47, and I sent it to somebody and said, "Take this apart and tell me if you can build this."
Oh, okay.
So it was like a forensics on a real Neumann BV-8 transformer from the late 50s.
Oh, okay.
And they said, sure, we'll make these for you.
Yeah. And then also, too, you mentioned, I was curious about this, it mentioned on the website, paper and oil output capacitor.
Right. No. That's, again, same thing. It's the old style stuff that, people started realizing, you know, electrolytics could be made smaller and they were cheaper. Paper and oil caps were larger, more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And the same kind of thing when people started going to transistors instead of tubes. And then they went back to tubes because they went, well, these sound so much better. And the old style paper and oil caps are really smoother sounding capacitors. So in the more expensive mics, I tend to... Or in a custom build, I'd throw those in there.
Because is that both cardioid omni or is that just cardioid?
What?
The 47.
Oh, the 47 is cardioid only.
It's cardioid, and that's
right.
Because of the original, what you were trying to...
No, just because I couldn't figure out where to put the switch.
Okay. Oh, that is...
You know, just...
You know, that's sometimes
well,
it's
know,
a design, that's a major problem.
You know, it's funny because Leo Fender, you know, people used to ask Leo Fender, why did you go to this part? And he goes, well, because I went to the hardware store and they were out of the ones that I used to use. So
that's why,
you know, this year has that part and that year has that part. I do the same thing. It's like if I run out of a certain capacitor, like what I really like there's old Russian military, they're super high quality military stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great. And they had certain models of their paper and oil capacitors that they built, and they just ran out, so I switched to another one, and they sound amazing.
Great.
So Yeah, it's just like they weren't available that day. So you go, well, that one will work.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and let's try this mic now. I have my Martin out, and you have it set right now for cardioid and with the filter off, right?
Off, right.
So I'm going to play it just a little bit of finger picking. I'm about a little over a foot away from the sound hole. Now tell me where you want me to move if there's another
you. Just move around a little bit.
I'm going more towards the neck.
Yeah. You're losing a little bit of the boominess when you move away from the sound hole.
Now, let me have you, I'm going to keep playing. And hit the ribbon, the little
I'll hit the
filter. So I want them to hear what the difference is.
There's the high cut. It's very subtle, but it pulls a little bit of the highs out.
And then just switch it off again so they can hear.
A little more air there.
Now I'm going to go to pick and do that again. I'm going to just play... switch it.
So it's so right now the filter is off. So now it's got a little bit of a high cut.
Yeah, you're not hearing that real shit on the top.
Right. And then we'll turn it back on. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Now.
Nice.
Let's show the, I'm going to play, keep playing, and hit, change it from cardioid to omni. I know we're going to get a little more of the room.
Yeah,
but
you get more room, and you lose some of the low end.
Okay.
And a little bit of level as well. So there's an omni. Oh, yeah.
And like we were saying, Bo, that in a good room with the Omni setting, perfect.
Right.
I mean, it does. I like the, I mean, I understand the, we're dealing with physics, the cardioid physics, the boom and stuff, and it can be, you can utilize it, but I like that. That's flat.
Oh, it's really great, yeah.
This ringing. Now I'm going to pull out the 12 string and we'll do this. We'll do again. I'm going to hand that and grab this guy.
Nice.
Okay. And this will give a. Now this guitar has a mid range.
Yeah, that's a beautiful. Do you want to start on the Omni?
We're on Omni right now, so let's just go ahead and go with that, and then you can hit the cardioid. Okay, let's go ahead and go cardioid. Guitar, it just makes it jump out. It's much more.
See, now you have let's hit the high cut switch with the 12 string. It'll really smooth that out quite a bit.
There with that.
Oh, yeah. You hear it right.
he's wetting it reverb. Up. Listen to that. These are good. This guitar is a great. The 12 strings are always a test for the smoothness of the high end.
Absolutely.
And this thing is just really smooth. Now go ahead and hit, since he has the reverb, it's still on there. Hit the Omni, because I just like.
Wow,
that is just amazing. That's really, really good. No, there's a reason why this was the model after the MGM. That those orchestra recordings were just smooth, but this thing is just amazing.
That's right.
And I'm using it on guitar. I mean, you got to listen to the Elton John album. I mean, his voice is just killer on that.
Oh yeah.
Now let me ask you this. Now I'm playing acoustic guitar here, but what's are these? They can handle pretty loud sound levels, right?
Oh yeah.
What would you recommend if you were miking like a Marshall cabinet or something like that, and you're cranking it up?
You know.
What do you think? Because you know these mics better than anybody.
Well, you know, a lot of times, you know, large diaphragm tube condensers would not be really the first choice for miking like a really screaming Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
Might bring it back a little bit.
Right.
Yeah.
In a room. Yeah. Now, did you ever, in your own recording experience, one of the things I know that a lot of people claim Jimmy Page developed it was the three mic technique. I did a session once where we had a Marshall stack. It was a plexi. And we had a 57 about a foot away from one of the speakers. Right. And then we had a AKG 414 about 6 feet away. And then we had a Neumann 87 way on the other end of the room.
Right.
And then they mixed that together and it sounded huge.
Yeah. I would probably choose this one for the far back.
For the far back. But I mean, especially if it was an Omni. Again, what we were saying, mm-hmm. Bo, in the right room, it would just...
It's got to be the right room, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, because you can set up your Amstag in any room. You will not get that.
Yeah.
Because the reflections and how all that compounding stuff is.
Well, I think that's a problem with the project studios, because everybody's pretty much working out of project studios. When you're working in your room, in a home... You know, you're trying to filter out the dog barking. And
well, you also just don't have the physics. You don't have the volume. You don't have the space, really, for the sound to generate.
Yeah, right? Well, even in this room, this is what, like...
Nobody is seeing that on the radio.
No.
he's putting his hands...
It's just true.
No, we're talking about that this is physics and this is about footage.
Right.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, let me try something here. Set it up for cardioid. And the filter's off, right?
Right.
I'm going to back off a little bit. And just so you can hear, because that's another thing that Bo and I have talked about before. You got to let the guitar breathe a little bit. And a lot of times, now, when you're, obviously, if you're playing with a section and you're goboing everything, it's hard to do that. But if it's like a solo guitar or you're overdubbing, you can pull the mics back and get that.
So, and also, you know, when I used to mic acoustic guitars, I actually never really got this close with a mic on an acoustic. I used to actually come in about here with a large diaphragm, a little bit.
And that you can't see.
Seeing that.
Yeah.
No, I'm showing you. But
he's talking.
Know.
He's talking about his hand is about.
Well, right now we have the mic right in line with the sound hole, and I would bring it up about a foot and angle it down a little bit.
Yeah, because I'm actually angling up a little, the way I'm tilting the guitar a little bit.
Oh, now, that's not a good photo.
But now I'm about. I'm about two and a half feet. So I'm going to play again and tell me if you hear a difference. You should hear a little more.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's cardioid, I'm away from it, so it's not getting the boom that I was getting at the close.
It's also not a bad sounding little room, really, actually.
Well, actually, this is, what is this, like 10, 8 by 8?
Yeah.
About 8 by 8, and it's square, so it's...
And it's all hard.
Yeah, it's all hard surface. But even playing back here, now let me change over to the Martin.
And you have carbon on the floors.
Right.
Yeah. I'm going to use the Martin.
And we're all wearing jeans. And
now, this, I'm at the same plot, but listen.
And glasses. Everybody's wearing glasses.
That's reflecting right there. Now. It's got a nice rich sound.
Copyright.
So the Martin... Farther back, it's getting a deeper sound, the dreadnought. It's a nice rich sound. And it's still, listen.
It's got a very nice, even at this distance, which is about, it's almost about 3 feet away right now from the sound hole. It still has a very nice and full body sound. But it's also about, like we talk about, it's not only the room, it's also about the instrument itself, because the guitar was sound, was, or the acoustic guitar was designed to project the sound away towards an audience.
Yeah. Now the 12 string is not a dreadnought. It's a guild, so it's not like a, it's like an OM. But this is, the dreadnought is made to be deeper and
right.
So it's right there. It's right in the pocket. Let me try finger picking from this distance. I mean, everything is just right in the pocket. So he just turned all our mics off, so you're not getting the leakage from the other mics, but you can hear, I mean, the articulation, every note that I'm picking, it's, and I'm almost over a foot away from where I was before, and this mic is just, it's, you didn't change the gain levels, it's the same gain levels, so it's picking up everything, it's just that same. I'm getting a little bit more of the box resonating the lower frequencies. I mean, it's what blows me away is that I can get delicate with the guitar, and really just get. I mean, I'm not playing terribly loud, but it gets the nuances. So when I dig in a little bit on the guitar on like the high G, it grabs that, and then I'm still playing soft. So let me do it a little more. Soft sound.
everybody just a quick little story about this particular microphone. When this microphone, when I first started making this mic, the original transformer company, the company that built the original transformer, was still in business, and I called them up and I said, "Oh, I need you to make me this transformer. I want to buy this transformer." And they said, "Yeah, we don't make that anymore. We stopped making that in the '60s." And I said, "Well, what will it get to take? What do I need to do to get you to make me this transformer?" And they said, "No, we just don't. We don't do it." And okay, you know. And I called them a couple of days later, and I said, "Listen, I'm sorry to bother you again, but I really need you to make me this transformer." And they said, "You know, we really don't make it." And it started to be a thing where I just really wanted it. So I called these people like every day for about 7 or 8 months.
Wow.
To the point where I was going, hey, Mary, how are the kids? She'd go, yeah, how's the temperature in L.A.? You know, we got to be buddies and stuff. And I mean, seriously, I was calling them like every day, every other day, and just going like, you know, you got to make me this transformer. And finally, one day, they just said, "Listen, if we make this transformer for you, will you stop calling us?" And I said, "That's all I'm asking."
Maybe the trick is start calling them twice a day.
Twice a day. But they were very, very nice people, and we have a really good working relationship now, and it's been a few years, and they've been making it for me. And it's a super limited run of these transformers, and they're making it only for me right now. So...
Well, that's good. That I mean, it makes a difference.
Well, it's the original part from the microphone from the '50s. Mm-hmm. It's the original thing.
This thing's a great. I love this mic.
Yeah. When I was listening to it on the headphones, it sounded like I'm without my headphones. It's like I'm listening it with my own ears, and it's like, sure, every microphone should do that, but not every microphone does that.
Right.
Yeah.
And yours is so natural; it doesn't. Color the tone in any way. It's like really listening it, you know, with my own ears.
Right. Well, pulling back from the mic, the cardioids flatter, a little flatter, because you're not getting the bass boom.
Right.
And so it sounds more natural than when I'm up close. When I'm up close, you can hear it thump more, as we heard before. But it's just sensitive enough where it's picking it up. That blows me away, because usually there's a volume change on a lot of different mics that I've used, good mics. In the studio, when I pulled away, they had to adjust. It changed everything. This didn't change. I mean, it flattened a little bit, but that's the physics of the cardioid. But all those, you know, inner voices that I was playing up in this part right here, all of that was just clear and articulated. Wow. I mean, to me, that's a mind-blowing. I mean, that's all. It's well-balanced. I mean, it helps to have a Martin playing a Martin, but... Mm-hmm. We're already out of time. I sit here playing the guitars. Anyway, what I wanted to mention, www.perlmanmicrophones.com. Check out the site. They talk about all of the different, you can see all the different models and what they're doing. And where can you get these besides, you can order them direct from you, right?
We can, but I have international dealership, Vintage King.
Mm-hmm.
Is one of my big dealers. Plus, I've got dealers all over the States and all over Europe right now.
Oh, very cool. Right. And so they're easy. They're available. I mean, that like I know that some of these are custom made to order, right? Like the church.
Right. If somebody calls up and wants specific things, that's usually through me.
Yeah. Okay. So like, but the TM1 is their main.
Right.
Their main one, and the TM2. Those are pretty much.
Right, those
you make a bunch of those.
Yeah, those sell like hotcakes.
So, but and then also too, I want to mention real quick, as far as playing steel guitar, what's coming up for you?
Oh well, we're doing the California Saga.
Okay, that's June 24th, if I'm correct.
24th and 25th at the El Rey, and we're doing it's a charity benefit. We've done a few of them so far. A while back, we did City of Hope. We raised about $25,000.
Oh, very cool.
And the last one we did at the Alex Theater, I was honored to have been asked to play with the Wild Honey Orchestra, and they raised, again, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for autism awareness. And we're doing another one. I think I don't remember what exact charity this one is for, but we're doing two nights, and everybody is donating their time. And
Well, check out on Facebook. Just look up California Saga. They have a page. Right. And has all the information to get the tickets and
stars
stuff.
After stars after
there's a
stars.
Lot of major players on it, yes. And then, Bo, what's going on with you?
Oh, well, a few things. Well, I'm mixing a record for another Latin acoustic type of artist. And then I do a lot right now, demoing Salamone Melodyne 4 at various studios around. I work with them and for Fab Filter and Yuhi. A lot of demos for that right now.
And your website?
Popsproductions.com.
Popsproductions.com. Check out what he's doing. And then Bo's on Facebook too, because he does a lot of stuff explaining like Melodyne. He's also an expert on digital performer. He's done, he has a lot of stuff that he talks about how to set it up and stuff. And he's great. He knows his stuff on digital.
Also DP.
DP. DP, that's right. Well, guys, I'm going to leave with a cut from, again, and I want to thank JP Duran and Lisa Carbet for letting me use the clips. I'm going to play another one from their album, Bridge Between. This is Time After Time. And also a special thanks to Lori Reamer for introducing us.
Also, may I add, too, that JP and Lisa also use A-Design's audio equipment, too. Peter Montesi, also another super high quality mic preamp out in Woodland Hills.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. So it's just this small world of all of us getting together and adding to a project.
So in the fall, we're going to lock the date in the next couple of days, but he's going to be back and we're going to be back with pedal steel. Going to be fun.
That'll be fun.
You'll have to bring this mic if you can and we'll mic the pedal steel with that. No.
Okay.
Anyway, everybody, also to Ronan, thanks for coming and running the board for me. Bo, guys, thanks so much.
Awesome.
And
thank you.
We'll leave you with this clip, and everybody have a great week. We'll see you next week.